Chapter 17. A quote from Major Offendra's Guide to the Writer's Quadrant, unauthorized edition. It is therefore only natural that the more powerful the dragon, the more powerful the signet its rider manifests. One should beware of a strong rider who bonds a smaller dragon, but even warier of the unbonded cadet, who will stop at nothing to seize a chance to bond. After sleeping in the crowded barracks for the last 2 months, it's weird and oddly decadent to have my own room. I'll never take the luxury of privacy for granted again. I close my door behind me as I limp into the hallway. Rhiannon's door, across the small hall from mine, opens, and I see Sawyer's tall, lean frame come out. He runs his fingers through his hair, and when he sees me, his eyebrows rise and he freezes, his cheeks almost as red as his freckles. Good morning, I grin. Violet. He forces an awkward smile and walks off, headed toward the main hallway of the first-year dormitory. A couple from Second Wing holds hands as they come out of the room next to Rhiannon's, and I offer them a smile as I lean back against my door and wait, testing my ankle by rolling it. It's sore, just like every time I sprain it, but the brace and my boot hold it in place well enough to keep my weight on it. If I were anywhere else, I would call for crutches, but that would just put another target on my back, and according to Zayden, I already have a big enough one as it is. Rhiannon walks out of her room and smiles as soon as she sees me. No more breakfast duty? I was told last night that all the less desirable duties were being handed off to the unbonded so our energy can be redirected for flight lessons. Which means I'll have to find another way to weaken my opponents before challenges. Zayden's right. I can't always count on taking every enemy down with poison. But I'm not going to ignore the only advantage I have here, either. One more reason for the unbonded to hate us, Rhiannon mutters. So, Sawyer, Harry. We start down our hallway, passing a few other rooms before meeting up with the main corridor that leads to the rotunda. I have to say, the first-year rooms aren't as spacious as the second year's, but at least we both got ones with windows. A grin curves her lips. I felt like celebrating. She darts a quick side eye at me. And why have I not heard of you celebrating? We melt into the crowd moving toward the gathering hall. Haven't found anyone I want to celebrate with. Really? Because I heard that you and a certain squad leader had a moment last night. My gaze whips toward hers and I nearly stumble over my feet. Come on, Vi, the entire quadrant was out there. And you don't think someone saw you? She rolls her eyes. You're not going to get a lecture from me. Who gives a shit if it's frowned upon to be in a relationship with a superior officer? There's no regulation, and it's not like any of us is guaranteed to live through the day. Solid points, I admit. But I shake my head, searching for the right words. It's not like that with us. I'd always hoped it would be, but when he kissed me, there was nothing there. Like, nothing. It's impossible to keep the disappointment out of my voice. Well, that's shitty to hear. She hooks her arm through mine. I'm sorry. Me too, I sigh. A door opens farther down the hall, and Liam Mari walks out with his arm wrapped around the waist of another first year who bonded a brown club tail. Looks like everyone was celebrating last night except me.
Good morning, ladies. Riddick forces his way through the crowd and slings an arm around each of our shoulders as we enter the rotunda. Or should I say, riders?
I like the sound of riders, Rhiannon replies, shooting a smile in his direction.
It has a certain ring to it, Riddick agrees.
It's definitely better than dead. Where's your relic? I ask Riddick as we pass through the columns of carved dragons and take the steps into commons.
Right here.
His arm falls off my shoulder and he shoves the sleeve up his tunic
to reveal the brown mark of a dragon silhouette on his upper arm. You? Can't see it. It's on my back.
That will keep you safer if you're ever separated from that massive dragon of yours.
His eyes dance.
I swear, I thought I was going to shit myself when I saw him on the field. What about yours, Rhi?
Somewhere you'll never see, she responds.
You wound me.
He slaps his hand over his heart.
I highly doubt that, she retorts, but there's a smile on her face.
We move through commons and into the gathering hall, then make our way through the line for breakfast.
It's odd to be on this side of it, and I startle at the sight of the guy behind the counter.
It's Orin.
He glares at me with a hatred that trickles like ice down my spine. I skip his station, opting for fresh fruit that I know can't be tampered with, just in case he decides to take my approach to conflict and poison me.
Asshole, Riddick mutters behind me. I still can't believe they tried to kill you.
I can, I shrug, taking my chances with a mug of apple juice. I'm the weakest link, right? Unfortunately for me, that means people are bound to try and take me out for the good of the wing.
We headed toward the fourth wing section and find a table with three extra seats.
Mind if we, Riddick starts.
Absolutely, it's yours.
A couple of guys from tail section scurry off the bench.
Sorry, Sorengale,
the other says over his shoulder as they find another table, leaving this one empty.
What the hell? Well, that was really fucking weird.
Rhiannon rounds the other side of the table and I follow, putting our backs to the wall as we step over the bench and sit, setting our trays in front of us.
I'm half tempted to give my underarms a whiff to see if I smell.
Even weirder?
Riddick remarks, gesturing across the hall toward first wing. Following his line of sight, my eyebrows lift. Jack Barlow is being squeezed out of his table. He's forced to stand as others take his seat.
What the hell is going on?
Rhiannon bites into a pear and chews. Jack moves to another table, whose occupants won't make room for him, and then finds a place two tables down.
How the mighty have fallen,
Riddick notes, watching the same show I am, but there's no satisfaction in watching Jack struggle. Feral dogs bite harder when they're cornered.
Hey, Sorengale,
the stocky girl from first wing I beat in my second challenge says with a tight smile as she walks past our table.
Hi,
I wave awkwardly as she walks away, then turn to whisper to Riddick and Rhiannon.
She hasn't spoken to me since I took one of her daggers in that challenge. It's because you bonded Tern.
Imogen blows her pink hair out of her face and throws her leg over the bench across from us to sit, pushing up the sleeves of her tunic and revealing her rebellion relic.
The morning after threshing is always a clusterfuck. Power balance shifts, and you, little Sorengale, are now about to be the most powerful rider in the quadrant. Anyone with common sense is going to be scared of you.
I blink, my pulse elevating.
Is that what's going on?
I look around the hall and take note. Social groups have split up, and some of the cadets I would have considered threats are no longer sitting where they usually do.
Which is why you're now sitting with us?
Rhiannon arches a brow at the second year.
Because I can count on one hand the number of nice words you've said to any of us.
She holds up a fist with zero fingers raised. Quinn, the tall second year in our squad who hasn't bothered to so much as look our way since Parapet, takes a seat next to Imogen, and Sawyer arrives, sitting on Rhiannon's other side. Quinn tucks her blonde curls behind her ears and brushes her bangs out of her eyes, her round cheeks rising as she smiles at something Imogen says. Have to admit, the hooped piercings that line the shells of both her ears are pretty awesome. And among her half dozen patches, it's the dark green one, the same color as her eyes, with two silhouettes that's most intriguing. I should have studied up on what all the patches mean, but according to what I've heard, they change every year. I'm personally a fan of the first ones we've been given. I had to sew the flame-shaped patch with the emblem for fourth wing, and the centered reddish number two with great care, being sure to only stitch the fabric of my corseted armor
since it's not like any needle is going to penetrate the scales. My favorite patch, though, is the one beside the flame section one. We're the squad to have the most surviving members since Parapet. This year's Iron Squad.
You weren't interesting enough to sit with before, Imogen responds, then bites into a muffin.
I usually sit with my girlfriend in Claw's section. Besides, no use getting to know you when most of you die, Quinn adds, tucking her curls away again, just to have them spring forward. No offense.
None taken? I start on my apple. I nearly spit it out when Heaton and Emery, the only third years in our squad, flank Imogen and Quinn on the bench across from us. The only people we're missing are Dane and Sienna, who are eating with leadership as usual.
I thought Seifert would bond, Heaton says to Emery across the table, as though we've caught them mid-discussion. The normally red flames in their hair are green today. Other than losing to Sorengale, he nailed every challenge.
He tried to kill Endarna.
Shit, maybe I should have kept that to myself.
Every head at the table turns toward me. My guess would be that Taryn told the others.
I shrug. But Barlow bonded? Riddick questions. Though from what I've heard, his orange scorpion tail is on the smaller side. She is, Quinn confirms, which is why he's struggling this morning.
Don't worry, I'm sure he'll make up for his lack of social standing in other ways, Rhiannon mutters, her gaze narrowing on my tray. You have to have some protein, Vi. You can't just survive on fruit.
It's the only food I can be sure isn't tampered with, especially with Orin behind the counter. I busy myself with peeling an orange.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Imogen scrapes three pieces of sausage onto my plate. She's right. You're going to need all your strength to ride, especially with a dragon as big as Taryn.
I stare at the sausage. Imogen hates me just as much as Orin does. Hell, she's the one who broke my arm and ripped out my shoulder on assessment day.
You can trust her,
Taryn says, and I startle, dropping the orange. She hates me.
Stop arguing with me and eat something.
There's zero room for debate in his tone. My gaze rises to meet Imogen's, and she tilts her head, staring back in challenge. I use my fork to cut the link, then pop it into my mouth and chew, focusing on the conversation at the table again.
What's your signet? Rhiannon asks Emery.
Air rushes down the table, rattling the glasses. Air manipulation. Got it.
That's epic. Riddick's eyes widen. How much air can you move?
None of your business.
He barely spares him a glance.
Sorengale, after class is out today, you're mine, Imogen says.
I swallow my current bite. I'm sorry? Her pale green eyes lock on mine.
Meet me in the sparring gym.
I'm already working with her on sparring, Rhiannon starts.
Good. We can't afford her to lose any challenges,
Imogen retorts.
But I'm going to help you with weights. We need to strengthen the muscles around your joints before challenges resume. That's the only way you'll survive.
The hairs rise on the back of my neck.
And since when do you care about my survival?
This isn't a squad thing. It can't be, not when she didn't give a shit before.
Since now, she says, gripping her fork in her fist. But it's the lightning-fast glance toward the dais at the end of the hall that gives her away.
Her concern isn't coming from the goodness of her heart. Something tells me it's an order.
Squads are about to be condensed at morning formation. We'll be down to two in every section, she continues. Atos kept the highest number of his first years alive, hence the patch. So he'll be allowed to retain his squad. But we'll probably gain a few when they strip the squads from those who weren't as successful.
As discreetly as I can, I look to my right, past the other fourth wing tables, and to the dais where Zayden sits with his executive officer and the section leaders, including Garrick, whose shoulders look like they should take up at least two seats. It's Garrick who looks my way first, his forehead lining with,
what is that? Worry?
Then he looks away. The only reason he'd be remotely worried. He knows. He knows my fate is tethered to Zayden's. My gaze snaps to Zayden and my chest tightens. So freaking beautiful. Apparently my body doesn't care that he's as dangerous as they come in the quadrant because heat rushes through my veins, flushing my skin. He's using a dagger to peel an apple, removing the rind in one long curl. And the blade continues its path as his eyes lift, locking with mine. My whole head tingles. Gods, is there any part of my body that doesn't physically react to the sight of him? He glances toward Imogen and back to me. And that's all it takes for me to know for certain. He's ordered her to help train me. Zayden Ryerson is now in the business of keeping his mortal enemy alive. A few hours later, after the squads are rearranged and the death roll is read, all the first-year riders and fourth wings stand in our newly issued flight leathers, waiting in front of our dragons on the flight field. The uniform is thicker than our usual one, with a full jacket I've buttoned over my dragon scale armor. And unlike our regular uniforms, whatever we choose them to be, flight leathers bear no insignia besides our rank at our shoulder and any leadership designation. No names, no patches, nothing that could give us away if we're separated from our dragons behind enemy lines. Just a lot of sheaths for weapons. I try not to think about possibly fighting in the war effort one day and focus on the organized chaos evolving on the flight field that morning. I can't miss the way the other cadets look at Tarn, or the wide berth the other dragons give him. Honestly, if I had those teeth bared at me, I'd back away too.
No, you wouldn't, because you didn't. You stayed and defended Andarna.
His voice fills my head, and I can tell from his tone there are places he'd rather be. Only because there was a lot going on at the moment, I respond. Andarna isn't coming this morning?
She has no need for flight lessons when she can't bear you.
Good point. Though it would have been nice to see her. She's quieter in my head, too. Not as meddlesome as Tarn.
I heard that. Now pay attention.
I roll my eyes but focus on what Kaori is saying from the center of the field. His hand is up, using common lesser magic to project his voice so we can all hear.
God help us when Riddick figures out how to do that.
I bite back a smile, knowing he'll find some way to annoy the shit out of every rider in the quadrant, not just his squad.
And at only 92 riders, you are our smallest class to date.
My shoulders dip. I thought 101 were willing to bond plus you.
Willing doesn't mean they found worthy riders,
Tarn answers. And yet two of you chose me? With 41 unbonded, that's quite the insult.
You're worthy. At least I think you are, but you apparently don't pay attention in class.
He chuffs and a warm puff of steam blasts the back of my neck.
There are 41 unbonded riders who would kill to be standing where you are, Kaori continues. And your dragons know that your bond is at its weakest point right now. So if you fall, if you fail, there's a good chance your dragon might let you if it thinks the unbonded will be a better choice.
Comforting, I mutter. Tarn makes a noise that reminds me of a scoff.
Now we're going to mount, then follow a series of specific maneuvers your dragons already know. Your orders are simple today. Stay in your seat.
Kaori finishes. Then he turns and breaks into a sprint, racing the dozen feet toward his dragon's foreleg and making the vertical climb to mount. Just like the last obstacle on the gauntlet. I swallow, wishing I hadn't eaten so much for breakfast, and turn to face Tarn. To my left and right, other riders are doing the same mounting maneuver. There's no way I can pull that off normally, let alone with my ankle still healing. Tarn dips his shoulder and makes his leg into a ramp for me. Defeat just about swallows me whole. I've bonded the biggest and,
Certainly the grumpiest dragon in the quadrant. And yet he has to make accommodations for me.
They're accommodations for me. I've seen your memories. I'm not about to have you sticking daggers into my leg to climb up. Now let's go.
I snort, but make the ascent, shaking my head as I navigate his spikes to find the seat. My thighs ache from yesterday, and I wince as I get into position, gripping the pommel of scales. Kaori's dragon launches into the sky.
Hold tight.
I feel the same bands of energy clamp around my legs, and Tarn crouches a millisecond before he hurls us skyward. The wind tears at my eyes as my stomach falls away, and I risk holding on with one hand to lower my flight goggles. Immediate relief.
We had to go second? I ask Tarn as we fly out of the canyon and higher into the mountain range.
I get it now, why I didn't see the dragons training often, even though I've basically grown up at Besgaeth. The only people around us are other riders. Everyone is going to see when I slide right off.
I only agreed to follow Shmaud because his rider is your instructor.
So you're an in-front kind of guy. Good to know. Remind me to spend some time at Temple so I can make multiple appeals to Dune. I keep my focus on Kaori, watching for when the maneuvers will start.
The goddess of strength and war?
Tarn clearly scoffs this time.
What? Dragons don't think we need the gods on our side?
Shit, it's cold up here. My gloved hands tighten on the pommel.
Dragons pay no heed to your puny gods.
Kaori banks right, and Tarn follows suit, leading us into a steep dive down the face of one of the peaks. I clench with my legs, but I know it's Tarn keeping me in the seat. He holds me there through another climb, and even a near spiral of a turn, and I can't help but notice that he's taking everything Kaori is doing and making it harder. You can't hold me here the entire time, you know.
Watch me. Unless you'd rather be scraped off the glacier below like Gleen's rider back there.
I whip my head around to look, but all I see is Tarn's tail swinging, his massive spikes blocking the view.
Don't look.
We already lost a rider? My throat knots.
Gleen chose poorly. He never bonds strongly anyway.
Oh my god.
If you keep holding me like this, your energy will go into keeping me on instead of channeling when we need power for battle,
I argue.
It's a minuscule amount of my power.
How the hell am I supposed to be a rider if I can't stay on my damn dragon by myself?
Have it your way.
The bands fall away.
Thank you, shit!
He banks left and my thighs slip. My hands slide. I skid right off his side, my fingers fumbling for purchase and finding none. Rushing air fills my ears as I plummet toward the glacier, raw fear gripping my heart and squeezing like a vice. The shape of a body below grows bigger and bigger. I'm yanked upward as Tarn's claws catch me, harnessing me just like he did during threshing. He climbs high, then tosses me again. But at least I'm prepared for impact this time, as his back rises to meet my falling bottom. There's a disgusted roar of something I don't understand in my head.
What the hell does that mean?
I scramble for the seat and get myself into position as he flies level.
The closest translation for humans is probably, for fuck's sake. Now, are you going to stay in your seat this time?
He dips back into formation. And I manage to stay on. I have to be able to do this by myself. We both need me to do this, I argue.
Stubborn silver human,
Tarn mutters, following Kaori into a dive. I fall again. And again. And again. Later that evening, after dinner, I make my way to the sparring gym. Everything hurts from how many times I slid off Tarn's back, and I'm pretty sure there are bruises under my arms from him catching me. I'm through the rotunda and crossing into the academic wing when I hear Dane calling my name, jogging to catch up with me.
I wait for that familiar swell of happiness that we might have a minute alone, but it doesn't come. Instead, there's a sea of awkwardness that I don't know how to navigate. What the hell is wrong with me? Dane is gorgeous and kind and a really, really good man. He's honorable and my very best friend, so why don't we have any chemistry?
Rhiannon said you were headed this way,
he says once he reaches my side, concern knitting his brow. I'm going to work out. I force a smile as we turn the corner where the gym is just ahead of us, the large arched doors open.
You didn't get enough during flight today? He touches my shoulder and stops.
So I do too, pivoting to face him in the empty hallway. I definitely fell enough today. I check the bandage on my arm. At least I didn't tear open my stitches. His jaw works.
I honestly thought you'd be all right once Taryn chose you.
And I will be, I assure him, my voice rising. I just need to strengthen my muscles to stay seated through maneuvers. And Taryn insists on making everything harder than what Kaori is doing.
For your own good.
Are you always around? I snap back mentally.
Yes, get used to it.
I fight the urge to growl at the intrusive, overbearing,
still here.
Violet? Dane asks.
Sorry, I'm not used to Taryn butting into my thoughts.
It's a good sign. Means your bond is strengthening. And honestly, I'm not sure why he's giving you a hard time with maneuvers. It's not like there's any aerial threat out there besides griffins. And we all know one breath of fire means those birds are goners. Tell him to ease up on you.
Tell him to mind his own business.
I'll do that. I bite back a laugh. Take it easy on him. He's my best friend. Taryn snorts. A sigh rips from Dane's lips. And he palms my face gently, his gaze dropping to my lips for a heartbeat before he steps back.
Look, about last night.
The part where you told me Zayden would get me killed if I bonded Taryn, or the part where you kissed me? I fold my arms across my chest, careful with my right.
The kiss, he admits, his voice lowering. It never should have happened.
Relief courses through me. Right? I crack a smile. Thank gods he feels the same way. And it doesn't mean we're not friends.
The best of friends, he agrees, but his eyes are heavy with the sadness I don't understand. And it's not that I don't want you.
What? My eyebrows rise. What are you saying?
Are our wires somehow crossed? I'm saying the same thing you are.
Two lines appear between his brows.
It's incredibly frowned upon to have a physical relationship with anyone in our chain of command.
Oh.
Yeah, that definitely isn't what I'm saying. And you know how hard I've worked to be a squad leader. I'm determined to be a wing leader next year. And as much as you mean to me,
he shakes his head.
Oh, this is all about politics for him.
Right, I nod slowly. I get it. It shouldn't matter that the only reason he isn't pursuing me is rank, and it honestly doesn't. But it definitely makes me lose a little respect for him, which is something I never expected.
And maybe next year, if you're in a different wing, or even after graduation, he starts, hope lighting up his eyes.
Sorengail, let's go. I'm not sitting around all night. Imogen calls from the doorway, her arms folded across her chest. If our squad leader is done with you, that is.
Dane rears back, glancing between Imogen and me.
She's training you?
She offered, I shrug. Squad loyalty and all that, blah, blah, Imogen offers a smile that doesn't reach her eyes. Don't worry, I'll take good care of her. Bye, Atos. I toss Dane a quick smile and walk away, refusing to look over my shoulder to see if he's still there. She quickly follows after me, then leads me toward the corner on the left where the glass meets stone and pushes open a door I've never taken the time to notice before. The room is lit with mage lights and full of a variety of wooden machinery with racks and ropes and pulleys, benches with levers and bars attached to the wall. And on the other side, doing push-ups on a mat, is one of the first-year tiers I saw in the woods that night. Garrick crouched down next to her, urging her on.
Don't worry, Soarin'Gale, Imogen coos in a saccharine sweet tone. There's only three of us in here. You're perfectly safe.
Garrick turns, his gaze meeting mine, even as he continues calling off reps for the other first year. He nods once, then goes back to his task. You're the only one I worry about, I say as she leads me to a machine with a polished wooden seat and two cushioned squares that meet in front of it at knee height. She laughs, and I think it's the first genuine sound I've heard her make.
Fair point. Since we can't work that ankle of yours or your arms until they heal, we're going to start with the most important muscles you have for staying on a dragon.
She glances down my body and sighs with obvious distaste.
Those weak-ass inner thighs.
You're only doing this because Zayden is making you, right? I ask, parking my ass in the seat of the machine with the cushioned wood between my knees as she makes adjustments. Her eyes meet mine and narrow.
Rule number one?
He's Ryerson to you, first year. And you never get to question me about him. Ever.
That's two rules.
I'm starting to think my first guess about them is right. With that kind of fierce loyalty, they have to be lovers.
I am not jealous.
Nope. That pit of ugliness spreading inside my chest isn't jealousy.
It can't be.
She scoffs and pulls a lever that puts immediate tension on the wood, and they rush outward, separating my thighs.
Now get to work. Push them back together.
30 reps. Chapter 18. A quote from Colonel Daxton's Guide to Excelling in the Scribe Quadrant. There is nothing more sacred than the archives. Even temples can be rebuilt, but books cannot be rewritten. The wooden library cart squeaks as I push it over the bridge that connects the Writer's Quadrant to the Healer, and then past the clinic doors into the heart of Bezgaeth. Mage lights illuminate my way down the tunnels as I take a path so familiar that I could walk it with my eyes shut. The scent of earth and stone fills my lungs the deeper I descend, and the stab of longing that's hit me nearly every day for the past month since I was assigned to archives duty isn't quite as sharp as it was yesterday. And that wasn't as sharp as the day before. I nod to the first-year scribe at the entrance to the archives, and he jumps out of his seat, hurrying to open the vault-like door.
Good morning, Cadet Soarin'Gale, he says, holding the entrance open so I can pass.
I missed you yesterday.
Good morning, Cadet Pearson. I offer him a smile as I push the cart through. As quadrant chores go, I've scored my favorite.
I wasn't feeling well.
I'd had dizzy spells all day. No doubt from not drinking enough water, but at least I'd been able to rest. The archives smell like parchment, bookbinding glue, and ink.
They smell like home.
Rows of 20-foot-high shelves run the length of the cavernous structure, and I soak in the sight as I wait by the table nearest the entrance. The place where I spent the majority of my hours these past 5 years. Only scribes may pass any farther, and I am a rider. The thought brings a smile to my lips as a woman approaches in a cream tunic and hood, a single rectangle of gold woven onto her shoulder. A first year. When she pulls the fabric from her head, bearing long brown hair, and brings her gaze to meet mine, I full-on grin. I sign, Jacinia!
Cadet Soarin'Gale, she signs back. Her bright eyes sparkle, but she smothers her smile. For just this second, I abhor the rituals and customs of the scribes. There would be nothing wrong with pulling my friend into a hug, but she'd be chastised for a loss of composure. After all, how could we know how earnest the scribes are about their work, how dedicated they remain, if they were to crack a smile? It's really good to see you, I sign, and can't quit grinning. I knew you'd pass the test. Only because I studied with you for the past year, she signs back, pressing her lips together so they don't curve upward. Then her face falls. I was horrified to hear about you being forced into the Rider's Quadrant. Are you all right? I'm fine, I assure her, then pause to search my memory for the correct sign for a dragon bond. I'm bonded, and my feelings are complicated, but I think about the way it felt to soar on Tarn's back, the gentle nudges from Andarna to keep going when I thought my muscles might give out during Imogen's training sessions, and my relationships with my friends. And I can't deny the truth. I'm happy. Her eyes widen. Aren't you constantly worried you're going to... She glances left and right, but there's no one near enough to see us. You know, die? Sure, I nod. But oddly enough, you kind of get used to that. If you say so, she looks skeptical. Let's get you taken care of. Are these all returns? I nod and reach into the pocket of my pants for a small scroll of parchment and hand it to her before signing. And a few requests from Professor De Vera. The writer in charge of our small library sends a list of requests and the returns every night, and I fetch them before breakfast, which is probably why my stomach is growling. Burning all the extra calories from a combination of flight, Rhiannon's sparring lessons, and Imogen's torture sessions means I have an all-new capacity for food. Anything else? She asks after putting the scroll in a hidden pocket in her robes. Maybe it's being in the archives, but a stab of homesickness nearly bowls me over. Any chance you guys have a copy of The Fables of the Baron? Mira was right. I had no business bringing the Book of Fables with me, but it would be nice to spend an evening curled up with a familiar story. Jacinia's brow furrows. I'm not familiar with that text. I blink. It's not for academics or anything, just a collection of folklore my dad shared with me. A little on the dark side, honestly, but I love it. I think for a moment. There's no sign for wyvern or venin, so I spell them out. Wyvern, venin, magic, the battles of good and evil, you know, the good stuff, I grin. If anyone understands my love of books, it's Jacinia. I've never heard of that one, but I'll look for it while I pull these. Thank you. I'd really appreciate it. Now that I'm going to be the one wielding magic, I could use a few good folk tales of what happens when humans defile the power channeled to them. No doubt they were written as a parable to warn us of the dangers of bonding dragons, but in Navarre's 600-year history of unification, I've never read of a single rider losing their soul to their powers. The dragons keep us from that. Jacinia nods and pushes the cart, disappearing into the shelves. It usually takes about 15 minutes to gather the requests that come in from both professors and cadets in my quadrant. But I'm more than content to wait. Scribes come and go, some in groups as they train to become our kingdom's historians. And I found myself staring at every hooded figure, searching for a face I know I can't find. Searching for my father.
Violet?
I turn to the left and see Professor Markham leading a squad of first-year scribes. Hello, Professor. Keeping my face emotionless around him is easier because I know he'll expect it.
I didn't realize you had library chore duty.
He glances toward the spot in the shelves where Jacinia disappeared.
Are you being helped?
Jacinia, I cringe. I mean, Cadet Nailwort is most helpful.
You know, he says to the squad of five as they arc around me, Cadet Sorengale here was my prized student until the Rider's Quadrant stole her away.
His gaze meets mine under his hood.
I had hoped she would return, but alas, she has bonded to not one, but two dragons.
A girl to his right gasps, then covers her mouth and mutters an apology.
Don't worry, I felt the same way, I tell her.
Perhaps you can explain something to Cadet Nasya over here, who was just griping that there's not nearly enough fresh air in here.
Professor Markham turns his focus to a boy on his left.
This group is just starting their rotations in the archives.
Nasya turns beet red under his cream hood.
It's part of the fire mitigation system, I tell him. Less air, less risk of our history burning to the ground.
And the stuffy hoods?
Nasya lifts a brow at me.
Makes it harder for you to stand out against the tomes, I exclaim. A symbol that no one and nothing is more important than the documents and books in this very room. My gaze darts around the chamber, and a new pang of homesickness hits me.
Exactly,
Professor Markham levels a glare at Nasya.
Now, if you'll excuse us, Cadet Sorengale, we have work to attend. I'll see you tomorrow in battle brief.
Yes, sir. I step back, giving the squad room to pass.
You are sad?
And Darna asks, her voice soft.
Just visiting the archives. No need to worry, I tell her. It's hard to love a second home as much as the first.
I swallow.
It's easy when the second home is the right one. And that is what the Rider's Quadrant has become to me. The right home. The longing for the kind of peace and solitude I found only here can't match the adrenaline rush of flight.
Jacinia reappears with the cart, laden down with the requested books and bits of mail for the professors of my quadrant. She signs,
I'm so sorry, but I couldn't find that book. I even searched the catalog for Wyvern. I think that's what you said, but there's nothing.
I stare for a second. Our archives have either a copy or the original of almost every book in Navarre. Only ultra-rare or forbidden tomes are excluded. When did folklore become either of those?
Though come to think of it, I never came across anything like the fables of the Baron on the shelves while I was studying to become a scribe.
Chimera? Yes. Kraken? Sure. But wyvern or the venin that create them?
None.
Bizarre.
That's all right. Thank you for looking. I sign back.
You look different,
she signs, then hands the card over. My eyes widen.
Not bad different, just different. Your face is leaner, and even your posture,
she shakes her head. I've been training. I pause, my hands hanging by my sides while I consider my answer.
It's hard, but great, too. I'm getting quicker on the mat.
The mat? Her brow furrows. For sparring.
Right. I forget that you guys fight each other, too.
Sympathy fills her eyes.
I'm really all right, I promise her, leaving out the times I've caught Orin gripping a dagger in my presence,
or the way Jack seethes in my direction.
How about you? Is it everything you wanted?
It's everything and more, so much more. The responsibility we have not only to record history, but to speed information from the front lines is more than I ever could have imagined. And it's so fulfilling.
She presses her lips together again.
Good. I'm happy for you.
And I mean it.
But I worry for you.
She sucks in a breath.
The uptick in attacks along the border.
Concern etches lines into her forehead.
I know. We hear about them in battle brief.
It's always the same. Striking at faltering wards, ransacking villages high in the mountains, and more dead riders.
My heart breaks every time we get a report, and a part of me shuts down with each attack that I have to analyze.
And Dane? She asks as we head for the door. Have you seen him?
My smile falters.
That's a story for another day.
She sighs.
I'll try and be here around this time so I can see you.
Sounds wonderful. I refrain from pulling her into a hug and walk through the door she opens. By the time I return the cart to the library and make it through the lunch line, our time is almost up, which means I'm busy shoveling food in my mouth as fast as I can while the members of our original squad chat around me. The newbies, 2 first years and 2 second years we took on when the third squad was dissolved, are a table away. They've refused to sit with anyone with a rebellion relic. So fuck them.
It was the coolest thing ever, Riddick continues. One second, he was sparring against that third year with the wicked broadsword skills, and then Sawyer...
You could let him tell the story, Rhiannon chides, rolling her eyes.
No, thank you, Sawyer counters, shaking his head, staring at his fork with a hefty dose of fear.
Riddick grins, in all his glory telling the story.
And then the sword just twists in Sawyer's hand, curving toward the third year, even though Sawyer was way off the mark. He grimaces in Sawyer's direction. Sorry, man, but you were. If your sword hadn't decided to warp and go straight for that guy's arm. You're a metallurgist? Quinn's eyebrows rise. Really?
Holy crap! Sawyer can manipulate metals. I force down a little more turkey and openly stare at him. As far as I know, he's the first of us to display any form of power, let alone a signet.
Sawyer nods. That's what Carr says. Atos dragged me straight to the professor when he saw it happen. I'm so jealous, Riddick grabs his chest. I want my signet power to manifest. You wouldn't be so excited if it meant you weren't sure if your fork would stab into the roof of your mouth because you can't control it yet. Sawyer shoves his tray away. Good point. Riddick looks at his own tray.
You'll manifest when your dragon is ready to trust you with all that power, Quinn says, then finishes off her water.
Just hope your dragons trust you before about 6 months and...
She makes a sound like an explosion and mimics it with her hands.
Stop scaring the children, Imogen says. That hasn't happened in...
She pauses to think.
Decades.
When we all stare at her, she rolls her eyes. Look, the relic your dragons transferred onto you at threshing is the conduit to let all that magic into your body. If you don't manifest a signet and let it out, then after a bunch of months, bad things happen.
We all gawk. The magic consumes you, Quinn adds, making the explosion sound again.
Relax, it's not like a hard deadline or something, it's just an average, Imogen shrugs.
Fuck me, it's always something around here, Riddick mutters.
Feeling a little luckier now, Sawyer says, staring at his fork.
We'll get you some wooden utensils, I tell Sawyer, and you should probably avoid the armory or sparring with anything.
Sawyer scoffs. That's the truth. At least I'll be safe during flight this afternoon.
Adding flight classes to our schedule has been essential since threshing. The wings rotate for access to the flight field, and today is one of our lucky days of the week. I feel a tingle in my scalp, and know if I turn, I'll find Zayden watching us. Watching me. But I don't give him the satisfaction of looking. He hasn't said so much as a word to me since threshing. That doesn't mean I'm alone. Oh, I'm never alone. There's always an upperclassman somewhere near when I'm walking the halls or headed to the gym at night. And they all have rebellion relics.
I like it better when we have it in the morning, Rhiannon says, her face souring. It's way worse after we've eaten breakfast and lunch.
Agreed, I manage between mouthfuls.
Finish the turkey, Imogen orders. I'll see you tonight.
She and Quinn clear their trays, taking them back to the window for scullery.
Is she any nicer when she's training you? Rhiannon asks.
No, but she's efficient. I finish the turkey as the room begins to clear, and we all make our way toward the scullery window.
What's Professor Carr like? I ask Sawyer, then tuck my tray onto the stack.
The wielding professor is one of the only ones I haven't met since I haven't manifested a signet.
Fucking terrifying, Sawyer answers. I can't wait for the entire year to start wielding lessons so everyone can enjoy his particular brand of instruction.
We head out through commons and the rotunda and into the courtyard, all buttoning up our coats. November has hit hard with gusty winds and frosted grass in the morning, and the first snow isn't far behind.
I knew it would work, Jack Barlow says ahead of us, dragging someone under his arm and thumping her head affectionately.
Isn't that Caroline Ashton? Rhiannon asks, her mouth hanging open as Caroline heads toward the academic wing with Jack.
Yeah, Riddick tenses. She bonded Glean this morning.
Wasn't he already bonded? Rhiannon watches them until they disappear into the wing. His rider died on our first flight lesson. I focus on the gate ahead that leads to the flight field.
So I guess the unbonded still have that shot they're looking for, Rhiannon mutters.
Yeah, Sawyer nods, his features tense. They do.
You only fell about a dozen times that trip,
Taryn remarks as we land on the flight field.
I can't tell if that's a compliment or not. I take deep breaths and try to calm my racing heart.
Take it as you wish.
I mentally roll my eyes and scoot out of the seat as he dips his shoulder so I can slide down his foreleg. The move has become so practiced that I barely even notice that other riders are capable of leaping to the ground or descending the proper way. Besides, you can make it easier, you know.
Oh, I know.
I'm not the one putting us into spirals with steep banks while Kaori is teaching plane dives. My feet hit the ground of the field, and I arch an eyebrow at Taryn.
I'm training you for battle. He's teaching you parlor tricks.
He blinks a golden eye at me and looks away. Do you think we can get Endarna to join us next week, even if it's just to fly along? I do all the checks Kaori has taught us, looking for any debris that could have lodged between the long, taloned toes of Taryn's claws or between the rock-hard scales of his underbelly.
I am not foolish enough to not know that I have something stuck in my flesh. And I wouldn't ask Endarna to join us unless she requested it. She can't keep up the speed, and it would only draw unwanted attention.
I never get to see her, I blatantly whine. I'm always stuck with your grumpy ass.
I'm always here, Endarna answers, but there's no flicker of gold.
She's most likely in the Vale as usual, but at least she's protected there.
This grumpy ass just caught you a dozen times, Silver One.
Eventually, you could call me Violet, you know. I take the time to examine every row of his scales. One of the biggest dangers to dragons are the smallest things they can't remove that penetrate between the scales, causing infection.
I know, he repeats. And I could call you Violence, like the wing leader.
You wouldn't dare. I narrow my eyes as I move forward, checking where his chest begins to rise. And you know how much that ass annoys me.
Annoys you?
Taryn chuckles above me, the sound like a chuffing cat.
Is that what you call it when your heart rate?
Don't even start with me. A growl rumbles through Taryn's chest above me and vibrates my very bones. I pivot, my hands hovering along my sheathed daggers as Dane approaches. It's just Dane. I walk out from between Taryn's forelegs when Dane pauses a dozen feet away.
Anger does not suit him.
He growls again, and a puff of steam hits the back of my neck. Relax, I say, and glance back over my shoulder at him. My eyebrows shoot up. Taryn's golden eyes are narrowed in a glare on Dane, and his teeth are bared, dripping saliva as another growl rumbles.
You're a menace. Stop it, I say. Tell him if he harms you, I'll scorch the ground where he stands.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Taryn,
I roll my eyes and walk to Dane, whose jaw is locked, but his eyes are wide with apprehension.
Tell him, or I'll take it up with Kath.
Taren says if you harm me, he'll burn you, I say as dragons to the left and right launch skyward without their riders, headed back to the Vale. But not Taren. Nope, he's still standing behind me like an overprotective dad. I'm not going to harm you, Dane snaps.
Word for word, Silver One.
I blow out a breath slowly. Sorry, he actually said if you harm me, he'll scorch the ground where you stand. I turn and look over my shoulder. Better? Taren blinks. Dane keeps his eyes on me, but I see it there, the swirling anger Taren warned me about. I would rather die than harm you, and you know it. Happy now? I ask Taren.
I'm hungry. I think I'll partake in a flock of sheep.
He launches with great beats of his wings.
I need to talk to you.
Dane's voice drops, and he narrows his eyes. Fine, walk me back. I motion at Rhiannon to go on without me, and she walks ahead with the others, leaving Dane and me to bring up the rear. We fall back at the edge of the field.
Why didn't you tell me you can't keep your fucking seat? He shouts at me, grabbing my elbow.
I'm sorry? I yank my arm out of his hold. Taren growls in my mind.
I've got this, I shout back at him. All this time I've been letting Kaori teach you, thinking he must have everything under control. After all, if the rider of the strongest dragon in the quadrant couldn't keep her seat, then surely we'd all know.
He rips his hand over his hair.
Surely I would know if my best friend fell every fucking day that she flew. It's not a secret. Anger bubbles in my veins. Everyone in our wing knows. I'm sorry if you haven't been keeping tabs on your squad, but trust me, Dane, everyone knows. And I'm not going to stand here while you lecture me like I'm a child.
I stalk off, my strides eating up the ground as I follow my wing.
You didn't tell me, he says, anger in his voice giving way to hurt as he catches up, more than matching my pace.
There's not a problem, I shake my head. Taren can keep me buckled in magically if he needs to. I'm the one asking him to loosen the restraints. And I'd think twice before you question him. He's more of the char first, ask questions later type.
It's a huge problem, because he can't channel his full powers,
I ask as we make it out of the field, heading toward the steps that descend next to the gauntlet. I know that. Why do you think I'm up there asking him to loosen up? Frustration is a living, breathing thing inside me, eating up all rational thought.
You've been flying for a month, and you're still falling.
His voice follows me down the staircase.
So is half the wing, Dane. Not a dozen times they aren't, he shoots back.
He's on my heels as I pick up my pace toward the path that will lead back to the Citadel, the gravel crunching beneath my boots.
I just want to help you, Vi. How can I help?
I sigh at the plaintive tone in his voice. I keep forgetting this is my best friend, and he's having to watch me risk my life every day. I don't know how I'd feel if our roles were reversed. Probably just as concerned. So I try to lighten the mood and say,
You should have seen me a month ago when it was 36 times.
36?
His voice rises on the last word. I halt at the mouth of the tunnel and offer a smile.
It sounds worse than it is, Dane, I promise.
Will you at least tell me what part of flight you have trouble with? At least let me help you.
You want a list of my flaws? I roll my eyes. My thighs are too weak, but I'm building muscle. My hands can't grip the pommel, but they're getting stronger. It took weeks for my biceps to heal. So I'm training that one too. But you don't have to worry about me, Dane. Imogen is training me.
Because Ryerson asked her to, he guesses, folding his arms across his chest.
Probably. Why does it matter?
Because he doesn't have your best interest at heart.
He shakes his head, looking more like a stranger than I've ever seen him before.
First, it was bending the rules to make it up the gauntlet. And yes, Amber lit into me for an hour about how you acted dishonorably.
Dishonorably? Fuck this! And you just took her word for it without asking me what happened?
She's a wingleader, Vi. I'm not about to question her integrity.
I proved myself with the Codex, and Ryerson accepted it. He's a wingleader, too.
Fine, you made it up. Don't get me wrong, I couldn't stand myself if something happened to you, whether you were handling the trial the right or wrong way. And then I thought you'd be fine if you survived threshing, but even bonded to the strongest of them.
He shakes his head.
Go ahead, say it. My hands curl into fists, my nails biting into my palms. I'm terrified you're not going to make it to graduation, Vi. His shoulders slump. You know exactly how I feel about you, whether or not I can do anything about it, and I'm terrified.
It's that last line that does me in. Laughter bubbles up through my throat and escapes. His eyes widen.
This place cuts away the bullshit and the niceties, revealing whoever you are at your core.
I repeat his words from this summer.
Isn't that what you said to me? Is this who you really are at your core? Someone so enamored with rules that he doesn't know when to bend or break them for someone he cares about? Someone so focused on the least I'm capable of doing. He can't believe I can do so much more?
The warmth drains from his brown eyes.
Let's get one thing straight, Dane. I take a step closer, but the distance between us only widens. The reason we'll never be anything more than friends isn't because of your rules. It's because you have no faith in me. Even now, when I've survived against all odds and bonded not just one dragon, but two, you still think I won't make it. So forgive me, but you're about to be some of the bullshit that this place cuts away from me.
I move to the side and march past him through the tunnel, forcing air through my lungs. Other than the last year, when he entered the Riders' Quadrant, I can't remember a time without Dane in my life. But I can't take his constant pessimism about my future anymore. Sunlight overpowers me for a second as I walk into the courtyard. Classes are out for the afternoon, and I see Zayden and Garrick leaned up against the wall of the academic building like gods surveying their domain. Zayden arches a dark eyebrow as I pass by. I flip him the middle finger. I'm not taking his shit today either.
Everything all right?
Rhiannon asks as I catch up to her and the guys.
Dane is an ass. Make it stop! Someone screams, rushing down the steps of the rotunda and holding his head.
It's a first year in third wing who sits two rows beneath me in battle brief and perpetually drops his quill.
For God's sake, make it stop!
He shrieks, stumbling into the courtyard. My hands hover over my blades. A shadow moves to my left, and a glance tells me Zayden has moved, casually putting himself just ahead of me. The crowd hollows, forming a circle around the first year as he screams, clutching his head.
Jeremiah! Someone shouts, coming forward.
You! Jeremiah spins, pointing his finger at the third year. You think I've lost it?
His head tilts, and his eyes flare.
How does he know? He shouldn't know!
His tone shifts like the words aren't his own. Chills race down my spine, dragging my stomach to the ground.
And you!
He spins again, pointing at a second year in first wing.
What the hell is wrong with him? Why is he screaming?
He turns again, focused on Dane.
Is Violet going to hate me forever? Why can't she see that I just want to keep her alive? How is he? He's reading my thoughts.
The impression is uncanny, embarrassing, and terrifying.
Oh, gods, I whisper, my heart thundering so loud. I can hear the pounding blood in my ears.
Forget the embarrassment. Who cares if people know Dane is thinking about me? Jeremiah's signet power is manifesting. He can read minds, an intrinsic. His power is a death sentence.
Riddick stumbles backward on my left, shoved aside, and I don't need to look to know whose muscled arm now brushes my shoulder.
The scent of mint somehow steadies my heartbeat. Jeremiah unsheathes his short sword.
Make it stop! Can't any of you see? The thoughts won't stop!
His panic is palpable, clogging my own throat.
Do something! I beg Zayden, glancing up at him.
His unwavering, lethal focus is on Jeremiah, but his body tenses at my plea, poised, ready to strike.
Start mentally reciting whatever bookish shit you've learned.
I'm sorry? I hiss up at him.
If you value your secrets, clear your thoughts. Now,
Zayden orders. Oh, shit. Nothing comes to mind, and we're clearly in imminent danger. Many Navarian defense posts exist beyond the safety of our wards. Such posts are considered to be in a zone of imminent danger and should only be staffed by military personnel and never the civilians who usually accompany them.
And you!
Jeremiah turns, his gaze locking on Garrick.
Damn it all to hell! He'll know about!
The shadows around Jeremiah's feet snake up his legs in a heartbeat, winding around his chest until they cover his mouth in bands of black. I swallow the boulder in my throat. A professor pushes through the crowd, his shock of white hair bouncing with every step of his large frame.
He's an intrinsic! Someone shouts, and that seems to be all that's necessary.
The professor grips Jeremiah's head with both hands, and a crack echoes off the walls of the silent courtyard. Zayden's shadows melt away, and Jeremiah falls to the ground, his head at an unnatural, macabre angle.
His neck is broken.
The professor bends down and lifts Jeremiah's body with surprising strength, carrying him into the rotunda. Zayden inhales sharply beside me, then walks away with Garrick, headed toward the academic wing.
Nice to see you, too. Maybe I don't want a signet power after all,
Riddick murmurs. That death is merciful compared to what will happen if you don't manifest one, Dane says. And I swear I start to feel my relics burn across my back, even though my dragons haven't started channeling.
And that, Sawyer says from Rhiannon's side, was Professor Carr.
You always have to check your sources, Dad tells me, ruffling my hair as he stands beside me at the table in the archives. Remember that first-hand accounts are always more accurate, but you have to look deeper, Violet. You have to see who is telling the story.
But what if I want to be a writer?
I ask with the voice of a much younger version of me.
Like Brennan and Mom.
Wake!
A familiar consuming voice rumbles through the archives, a voice that doesn't belong here. You're not like them, Violet. That's not your path. Dad offers me an apologetic smile, the usual kind that says he sympathizes, but there's nothing he can do. The kind he gives me when Mom makes a choice he doesn't agree with.
And it's for the best. Your mother has never understood that while riders may be the weapons of our kingdom, it's the scribes who have all the real power in this world.
Wake before you die!
The bookshelves and the archives tremble, and my heart jolts.
Now!
My eyes fly open and I gasp as the dream disintegrates. I'm not in the archives. I'm in my room in the writer's...
Move!
Tarn bellows.
Fuck! She's awake!
Moonlight reflects off a sword slicing through the air above me. Oh, shit! I roll toward the opposite side of my bed, but not fast enough, and the blade slams into the side of my back with a force even my thick winter blankets can't defuse. Adrenaline camouflages the pain as the sword rebounds, unable to split the dragon scales. My knee slams into the hardwood floor, and I thrust my hands beneath my pillow, drawing back two daggers as I untangle from the covers and gain my feet. How the hell did they get my door unlocked? Blowing my unbound hair out of my face, I meet the wide, shocked eyes of an unbonded first year, and he's not the only one. There are 7 cadets in my room. 4 are unbonded men, 3 are unbonded women. I gasp with recognition. Make that 2, as she runs for the door and slams it on the way out. She opened the door. There's no other explanation. The rest are all armed, all determined to kill me, all standing between my unlocked door and me. My hands curl around the hilts of my daggers and my heart rate skyrockets.
Guess it won't do me much good to ask you to leave nicely.
I'm going to have to fight my way out of here.
Get away from the wall. Don't let them trap you.
Good point, but there's not exactly a lot of places to go in this tiny room.
Damn it! I told you her armor is impenetrable.
Orin hisses from the other side of the room, blocking my exit. fucking asshole.
I should have killed you during threshing, I admit. My door is closed, but surely someone will hear if I... A woman lunges for me, scrambling across my bed, and I dodge, sliding along the icy pane of the window. The window!
It's too high. You'll fall to the ravine, and I can't get there fast enough.
No window. Got it. Another woman throws her knife, rending the fabric of my nightgown's sleeve as it lodges in the armoire. But she missed any flesh. I spin, leaving the sleeve behind as it rips away, and flick my dagger as I round the end of my bed. It lands in her shoulder, my favorite target, and she goes down with a cry, clutching her wound. The rest of my weapons are stored near the door. Shit, shit, shit.
No more throwing things. Keep a hold of that weapon.
For someone who can't help, Taryn has no problem dishing out opinions.
You have to go for her throat, Orin shouts. I'll do it myself.
I move my blade to my right hand and fend off one attack from the left, slicing her down the forearm, and then another to the right, stabbing into a man's thigh. I kick out with my heel and catch another in the gut as he attacks, sending him careening back onto my bed, his sword tumbling after him. But now I'm cornered between my desk and the armoire. There are too many of them, and they all rush at the same damn time. My dagger is kicked out of my hand with appalling ease, and my heart seizes as Orin grips my throat, yanking me toward him. I sweep out for his knees, but my bare feet make no impact as he lifts me off the ground, cutting off my air supply as I kick for purchase. No, no, no. I dig my hands into his arm, my fingernails puncturing his skin as I claw, drawing blood. He might bear my scars after this, but his grip doesn't ease as he crushes my throat. Air. There's no air.
He's almost there,
Taryn promises, panic lacing his tone. He who? I can't breathe, can't think.
Finish her, one of the men yells. He'll only respect us if we finish her.
They're after Taryn. Taryn's roar of rage fills my head as Orin lowers my body, flipping me around as he curls his arm so my back is against his chest. At least my feet are on the ground. But the edge of my vision goes dark, my lungs fighting for oxygen that isn't there. The greedy eyes of a bleeding first year stare back into mine.
Do it, she demands. Your dragon is mine,
Orin hisses in my ear, and his hand falls away, replaced by a blade. Air rushes into my lung as cold metal caresses my throat, the oxygen flooding my blood and clearing my head enough to realize this is it. I am going to die. From one heartbeat to what will probably be my last, an overwhelming sorrow seizes my chest, and I can't help but wonder if I would have made it. Would I have been strong enough to graduate? Would I have become worthy of Taryn and Andarna? Would I have finally made my mother proud? The knife tip touches my skin. My bedroom door flies open, the wood splintering as it slams against the stone wall, but I don't have a chance to turn to see who is standing there before a shriek pierces my vision.
Mine!
Andarna screams. Skin-prickling energy zings down my spine, then rushes to my fingertips and toes, and the next breath I take is in total, complete silence.
Go!
Andarna demands. I blink and realize the first year in front of me doesn't. She isn't breathing, isn't moving. No one is. Everyone in this room is frozen in place. Except me.